Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. Yes, it's Monday. Get the cobwebs out. Stretch it out. It's time to get back to the work week. I wish we didn't have to. It was such a beautiful weekend, but it is time to dig in, and today we've got a big guest for you. Yes, a famous name in politics, a third-generation name in politics. George P. Bush is joining us today. He's the former Texas Land Commissioner, and he is running for Attorney General of Texas, challenging Ken Paxton in the primaries for next year. And he's going to be joining us to tell us why he's running, what his platform is, and what is going on at the border. He's been very hard on President Biden and the immigration policies there. He had a great tweet over the weekend talking about two Customs and Border Patrol agents who risked their life to save two illegal aliens who were trying to, in the most dangerous of ways, get into the country. He saluted them this week. And a reminder that Border Patrol officers not only protect us, they oftentimes protect the illegal immigrants who get themselves in trouble crossing a river, doing something dangerous as they try to get into the United States unlawfully. But we're going to have that great interview with George P. Bush in a few seconds. I'm really excited about it. Real opportunity to dig into the state of Texas, to the big picture of what's going on with immigration, the economy, cancer culture, critical race theory, so many of the moving parts of our political debate today. Texas is sort of a lab for how conservatives are countering what Joe Biden and his team is doing, and no better person to have than someone right on the ground. George P. Bush, candidate for Texas Attorney General, coming up right after the commercial break. But first, when we left on Friday, I promised you that we'd be breaking a story. We did. It reveals for the first time that Hunter Biden received a subpoena in the spring of 2016 from the federal government, the FBI, the IRS, the SEC, in a joint investigation of his longtime business partner, Devin Archer. That's the guy that went on the board of Burisma Holdings with him. So the guy that was involved in the Ukrainian natural gas company gig. And the subpoena triggered a moment of worry inside Hunter Biden's inner circle. Why? Because his accountants, his lawyers discovered that Hunter Biden had not, repeat, had not paid his taxes on most of the $1 million he had received from Burisma during the first 2 years he joined the natural gas company's board. So almost $1 million of income, much of it not covered by taxes. He needed to file a back tax thing. He needed to come up with the money, and they were afraid that with the Fed snooping around about Devin Archer, and they were looking at the very company, by the way, with Archer, where the two men's money was coming in from Ukraine, from Burisma, the monthly payments of $83,333 a month each for Hunter Biden and his buddy, Devin Archer, now a convicted felon, Devin Archer is. And so knowing that that money was going to come in, they were worried that the feds were going to ask the question, hey, are you paying taxes on this? How are you paying taxes on it? Now, second part of it, just as important, as they were doing the analysis and the expenses against the revenue, the income that was coming in from Burisma, they discovered another thing. Hunter Biden was kicking back a monthly finder's fee, a board finder's fee, to a Ukrainian American who helped him land that gig with Burisma. So how many of us have to pay someone every month to keep our job? How many of us have to pay a finder's fee for a job? It seems like an odd arrangement, something else we didn't know in the many ethical entanglements that Hunter Biden's overseas business deals had. But, well, we know, people will say, well, okay, that's great. We now know that Hunter Biden owed some taxes. Back in 16, he had failed to pay taxes. He had gotten a subpoena, it scared him. So what? And the answer is, in today's story, I tried to explain the so what. And that is the entire impeachment theory, the entire impeachment narrative, the entire impeachment story that Democrats gave us for the first Trump impeachment, the one that focused on Ukraine, was that President Trump abused his power of office, abused the power of the presidency, because he asked for an investigation of the Hunter Biden Burisma Ukraine matter when there was no evidence that Hunter Biden had done anything wrong. Basically, putting him under investigation just to put him under investigation, that's an abuse of power. I would agree with that. If you just announce or try to create an investigation, well, they're not. Guess what? There was a good reason to investigate Hunter Biden. And in fact, there were three or four good reasons why Hunter Biden's work, Burisma, Ukraine, the State Department in Ukraine, needed to be investigated. All of them came out after the impeachment trial of January 2020, but they're really worth noting. And so let me just run through them quickly. Hunter Biden now, in his own documents, acknowledged he hadn't paid taxes on his Burisma money for 14 and much of 15. Two, Hunter Biden was under criminal investigation starting in 2018 for tax issues. We now know. Yep, that's right. The firm that Hunter Biden used to do some of the foreign lobbying for Burisma, Blue Star Strategies, is under investigation by the Justice Department now for its work back then. So that's a third thing, according to a recent article in Politico. And four, documents that I got from FOIA under the Freedom of Information Act show that twice, not once, but twice, the Biden State Department reported that Burisma, while Hunter Biden was serving on the board, that's very important, Hunter Biden was on the board at this moment, that twice the gas company made bribery payments that were reported to the FBI once and to State Department higher-ups the second time. So, bribery, tax issues, undercutting corruption policy. That's another thing. Late last year, Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley, the two Republican senators who looked at the Ukraine and other foreign business dealings of Hunter Biden, said they had testimony from State Department officials saying, you ready? Get ready for this. Hunter Biden's role working for a corrupt company undercut the State Department, the U.S. efforts to fight corruption in Ukraine, and created the appearance of a conflict of interest. All right, so you got bribery, appearance of a conflict of interest, unpaid taxes, criminal investigations. Guess what? The Democratic storyline does not hold up for impeachment. It has fallen into tatters. We know it because we've got the proof sitting in paper. Check out both stories at justthenews.com. Hope you enjoy them. They're very important. All right, we're going to go to that commercial break. When we come back, George P. Bush is joining us. You'll want to hear from him. He's running for attorney general. Big moment for all of us. All right, we'll go to commercial break. When we come back, George P. Bush joining us. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right. You heard me right. 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special. 4 years for $30 and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest, a man whose name is well known. And now he's running for Texas Attorney General. Joining me right now is George P. Bush, Commissioner. Great to have you on the show.
Good to be with you, John. Thanks for having me.
You have an amazing family. I got to know your grandfather pretty well over the years, and an amazing record of public service. You got your dad a governor, your uncle was a governor and a president, your grandfather a president, and then you jumped in right behind him. And now, you're as Land Commissioner of Texas, you're now making the move to run for Texas Attorney General. What prompted that? What got you thinking that's a good race to jump into?
Well, Texans for a long time have known that our current attorney general was under securities fraud indictment, a criminal indictment against our top law enforcement official. But frankly, it was the FBI announcement that they were investigating claims of bribery, corruption, obstruction of a federal investigation last November that prompted me to think very closely about running for this office. It's an office that I admire. I think it is one of the most important in our state to fight back the federal overreach that we're seeing from Joe Biden, to help secure the border, to back our thin blue line on our streets, and to confront human trafficking. And that's what drives me. That's what I'm passionate about. As a military veteran, I initially ran for the land office to deal with veterans issues. And I feel like when we talk about our police officers under attack, our thin green line who are not supported by our president, I feel like it's a new challenge, one that a lot of Republicans need and want here in our state.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that those are the issues of the day. And there's such a dichotomy between what Republicans and conservatives stand for and what Joe Biden and the current Democrats are promoting across America. It seems like it'll be a great opportunity. You right off the bat, right when you jumped in, you had a really big announcement. The Border Patrol Union got behind you in the race. How big a moment was that? And what does it do for the campaign?
Well, it's an immediate shot in the arm. I mean, we had an incredible crowd that came out, a lot of young people, diverse audience, really collecting upon the election experience that we had here in Texas, where President Trump did very well and helped deliver success for down ballot Republican candidates. But then for my first trip, I went down to the border to expose the weakness of what we have from the perspective that the Trump wall has not been completed, that these are appropriated dollars from the Congress,
yeah,
and that they need to be spent to defend our border communities. So Brandon Judd, who's the president of the union, this is the exclusive agent that represents 18,000 Border Patrol agents that wear the thin green line every single day, keeping the watch on behalf of our country, came in and supported the campaign. And I couldn't be more honored to talk about their issues throughout this campaign. I can pretty much go to die and go to heaven, because this is, I think, the most important endorsement in this race, because our state is under assault and we have an unresponsive president.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You talked about federal overreach. You have a pretty developed platform. I mean, most candidates you get in don't have as much. I mean, you really have a very developed platform. I want to go to one thing that I remember as a reporter, and that was back, I think it was in 2015, 2016, you joined a lawsuit to help Texas ranchers fight the BLM's overreach when they were trying to impose on the Texas ranchers' property and will. Talk a little bit about what you learned about that lawsuit, that fight, and what it portends for the race ahead of you.
Well, I first learned about the issue when I was running for land commissioner, when I first had a chance to meet with privately owned farmers and ranchers that represented about 55,000 acres in North Texas along the border with Oklahoma, and telling me that the litigation actually dated back to the Clinton days, where the Clinton Bureau of Land Management sought to declare on behalf of the federal government more title. And for a lot of farmers and ranchers who have quietly paid their property tax and have been honorable citizens, to be told by their federal government that they would be going to court to defend and quiet title is unacceptable. And I think most Americans would agree. As it turns out, the state of Texas owns some acreage in the area of question. And so we enjoined a lawsuit bringing together on behalf of private landowners that couldn't afford the litigation expense and working with pro bono organizations here in Austin that defend private property rights, and successfully won in the courthouse against the federal government. I've also brought cases against the federal government under the Endangered Species Act. If you get this, John, where Fort Hood, our largest military installation in North America, not just in Texas,
right,
has a lot of acreage that prepares our young men and women for combat overseas. But yet the Golden Cheek Warbler, which in my opinion and in the opinion of Texas A&M, has plenty of population, because it was protected as an endangered species, it was actually resulting in the potential shutdown of acreage on Fort Hood.
Wow.
So I brought a case along with private developers, with other pro bono attorneys, and we were able to get a favorable judgment because the Obama administration used the wrong legal standard when evaluating when to protect a species and when not. So I do have the experience of fighting on behalf of the state of Texas as it relates to natural resources. If you look at the Biden executive orders, most of which affect the Texas economy, predominantly in oil and gas.
Right.
And so there's no better person suited for these types of lawsuits than somebody who's been in the oil and gas industry as an attorney, both as a private citizen and as a land commissioner. So, you know, we're actually in the process of looking at another lawsuit. I'll come back on your show in a few weeks and let you know which suit that is. It's related to the wall on behalf of the state of Texas, once again, holding deadbeat bureaucrats accountable and making them do their job.
How about that? That is going to be a big one. And, you know, it's funny, as you look out, there's so many things that are in the news today, and almost all of them, the counter alternative, the counter solution is coming from Texas. Texas is just full of ideas and conservative ideas, and not just ideas, they turn into action, whether it's critical race theory, election integrity. What is it the independent streak of Texas? How does Texas become sort of the lab for so many conservative ideas and policies?
Well, I think it's rooted in our rich history. I mean, after all, we were our own republic between 1836 and 1845. And since that time, we've honored our military veterans in a unique way. I think a lot of vets would say that Texas does a better job. When it comes to liberal progressive policies, I think a lot of Texans know that under the 10th Amendment, that we have the ability to assert our own state's rights. And it seems like whether it was the Obama administration, the Clinton administration, now the Biden administration, that we see an attack on our values, our way of life, whether it's living out our faith in the public square or designing an education system the way we see fit, or our economy, whether that's fossil fuel based or whether that's based upon industrial processes that somehow the left views to be evil and dangerous and dirty when it's not. So I just know that in my role as land commissioner, the best I can do is represent my beneficiaries, which are the school kids of Texas. And to your point on our independent streak, we have an endowment now in excess of $42 billion.
That's amazing.
Independent of taxes, independence of federal involvement, that right. All benefit public education. And that's through the sensible management of our natural resources. But as AG, I would continue to fight against the pushback, the inactivity that we've seen on the border, but their super activity to regulate our everything from our water streams to our riverbeds, our estuaries, our farms, our ranches, or oil and gas wells, the way that we run our economy in our state. And it's, I think for a lot of Texans who are not involved in politics, they just find it offensive and just want to be left alone.
Yeah, they want that, just that freedom that we've always been fighting for. You've talked a lot about human trafficking, sex trafficking. You've been a very eloquent voice for a very long time. Things were a little tamped down for a while because the border was more tightly regulated, and so it slowed down a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, and now it's really clearly accelerated with the Biden border policies. As an attorney general, what's one way you could deal with it? Now, you've had some ideas about how to tackle this and try to push back on what is really one of the great horrific crimes of our time.
Well, sadly, the current attorney general has led zero prosecutions in the last year. And that's because these cases typically have an original jurisdiction at the local or county level. And because of the crisis in leadership, none of the cases have been referred to the AG. So day number one, I would work to restore that relationship with local DAs to get those cases referred to us, to take on the complicated criminal networks that we know are operating on both sides of the border. Sadly, Texas is now number two, close behind California in terms of total reported cases for human trafficking. The illegal immigration situation has only amplified the crisis. But President Trump deserves a lot of credit for signing the FOSTA Act, which is the Fighting Online Sex Trafficking Act,
right,
which is an amendment under the Section 230 provision that everybody's talking about in Congress on whether it's related to political speech. But this allows state AGs and state law enforcement officials to better interdict the crisis that we're seeing online, because the traditional method by which we interdict these crimes are still based on the brick and mortar Keystone Cops model rather than going online and infiltrating these networks, because a lot of these young women are being groomed on their Instagram, their Snapchats, and you name it. So we just got to keep up with the times. It's moving online, leveraging the new exemption that President Trump has provided local law enforcement, and then putting the available resources behind it to take on these crimes.
Yeah, it's such an important thing. And we had a couple guests on this show just a month ago of people who were sex trafficked. And the stories just, they bring you to tears. No matter how tough you are, you hear a story like that and you're like, we're better than this in America. We got to stop it. And it sounds like you've made this a real, real big priority. Now, you're a man of faith. I'm a Catholic too. And I know you're a practicing Catholic. And abortion and value and life has been really at the root of your political career, your DNA of who you are. We have a president that is Catholic in practice, but not in doctrine on many issues like that. And this week, the Catholic bishops are talking about perhaps changing the policy for how politicians who don't adhere to church doctrine get treated. What's that like? I mean, you're on both sides of this aisle, right? You're in the Catholic Church and you're in politics. What sort of impact could that have on political leaders when it comes out?
Well, to me, it's my foundation. I can't speak to President Biden's excuse for why he does not support the rights of the unborn. My proudest moment as an elected official here in Texas was leading the largest pro-life rally on the southern steps of the Capitol two legislative sessions ago. And I'm proud to support legislation this session that we call the heartbeat bill that you saw in a lot of southern legislative state houses that restrict abortion past 8 weeks. This past Sunday in my own parish, our father called for prayers for the unborn and called for our elected officials to not only lead with their faith, but lead in the public square based upon their faith and their principles and faith. And he wasn't looking at me directly, but he may have known
you
that.
You felt it anyways, huh?
But, you know, in our call to prayers, we talk about how elected officials actually need to follow through on what they talk about in parish. And on Sunday mornings, you've got to, I think, have to lead with your faith. And this is one of those big issues where it's at the core of who I am, and I'm not going to compromise on it. So as AG, I you know, Supreme Court's already said they're going to hear the Mississippi case. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to get there in time to argue it, but I'd be in there on that case.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's going to be a landmark and really important. Now, I want to get to the $64,000 question, because a lot of people have written a lot about this, that in the era of Trump and the Republican Party, the Bush name maybe is seen as a liability, but you don't see it that way at all. And I wonder if you could explain a little bit just how you navigate that. There's perception and there's reality. A lot of your policies are directly aligned with all of the conservative policies, not only President Trump, but going back generations to your family. How do you deal with that issue on the trail and in the media and places where it comes up?
Well, make no mistake, President Trump is the life of the Republican Party. He has brought a new sense of energy. He's brought new voters. I mean, I remind folks in Texas that he carried Zapata County. This is on the border, one of the poorest areas of the state, over 90% Hispanic, and yet he carried it, almost carrying Hidalgo County as well. Through his message of economic opportunity, free markets, but most importantly, border security.
Yeah.
So his message resonates in new communities and has brought new voters. As a Bush, I love my dad, my uncle, my grandfather, and I try to honor their legacy. And they brought me, and I have them to thank for me being in the position that I'm at. But the reality is, and I make this argument all the time when I'm with them, is that President Trump is the future of the party. We need to carry on the successes that we've had this past November in our state, helping to elect new down ballot candidates and carry on this legacy. Because, you know, in short order, I said this last summer where I said President Trump is the only thing standing between our country and socialism. And people laughed at me and said, well, that's just election hyperbole. But as it turns out, you know, with about $10 trillion of additional spending on top of $25 trillion in national debt, I mean, our children or grandchildren are facing a size of government that they could never afford. Yeah. And this is no longer about our generation, John. This is about our kids and our grandchildren. And among younger people, polling is showing that 2 of 3 young Americans are open to socialism. So I take this threat very seriously. Biden, you know, he didn't really campaign. He was in the basement for most of the time.
That's right.
But when he did communicate with the media, he did say, well, you know, I'm kind of a sensible Democrat from the middle, and we've seen anything but that. So to me, you've got to look at the total picture here, and our country needs to have a recovery of conservative ideas. And I hope it starts with the House and Senate.
Yeah, next year seems to be the bellwether. We'll really know how much people have reacted to the Biden agenda. You talk often about students, and you were a teacher, if I recall correctly, at one point in your career. There's this incredible debate going on about what we're going to teach our children in the future. Is it going to be the patriotic education that you and I grew up on, or is it going to be this critical race theory or some of the other progressive ideas that are now making their ways into school boards? What do you think of that dynamic, and what would you do as Attorney General to try to address it?
Well, our state legislature was very proactive in saying enough is enough. Right. Critical race theory, woke culture, cancel culture, it's all dangerous for future generations in our classroom. We have an elective body composed in terms of our State Board of Education, and thankfully it's majority conservative, where they have held the line, and they've basically stood for the idea that we need to teach the Constitution, we need to teach more civics, we need to talk about the brilliance of our founders, this wonderful experiment that requires everybody's commitment, not just the commitment of a few. And, you know, it's only through civic education of principles that unite us that will allow our country to remain free and prosperous and the best country to live in the world. Otherwise, if we condemn people in the current generation for the sins of the past, we will never move forward as a nation. We will never be able to reconcile. So instead of this coalition of grievances that the other side continually presents, even in our classrooms, which we've known for a long time in post-secondary education throughout our country, but now in K through 12, the fight couldn't be bigger. You know, as a parent of two who are now 8 and 6, the stakes couldn't be higher in my household. I know that's what applies. That's why we see here in a state like ours, homeschooling has increased 3 times where it was last year before COVID.
Isn't that amazing?
And part of it, you know, people say, well, it was COVID, but I think it just comes down to values, and we're seeing more of that in our country. So what I encourage people to do is be involved in school board. Whenever I meet a candidate for school board, I say, God bless you, because you have the toughest job in politics. There's nothing more important than how we're educating our children. And we need an accurate civics education in American schoolhouses. Otherwise, we're just going to resent each other wherever we go.
Yeah, that's so important. You know, you said something, and I swear I had a deja vu moment, because I remember being with your grandpa in Houston back in, I don't know, 2010, 2011 for a day. It was a real treat for me. And he said something about it. If you spend too much time staring in the rearview mirror while driving the car of life, you're likely to crash. And that's always stuck with me in my head. One of those fun pieces of wisdom that he'd always would dole out. But it's true that too much of what we're the current debate and policies tried to address things that are 30, 40, 50, 100, 200, 300 years old. And the real issues are in the communities today. I mean, there are African-American communities that, despite the Great New Deal and all the different social policies, are still trapped in the cycle of poverty. Their children are going to failed schools. And all that looking backwards doesn't fix the present or the future. When you go about doing this, and obviously you have a very big vision for this, because you help students, you work one-on-one with them, what are some of the keys to breaking the cycle of failed schools?
Well, we need more school choice. Sadly, for a conservative state like ours here in Texas, we've fallen further and further behind other innovative schools and state houses that have dared to experiment and dare to achieve, whether it's Arizona or Florida, where they actually have and offer opportunity scholarships to kids in socioeconomically challenged areas or historically failing public school districts. You know, I tip my hat to Betsy DeVos for being a wonderful education secretary and being forced to withstand the shouts of the mob on this issue. But sadly, here in Texas, and part of it is not necessarily Republican Democrats, some of it is rural versus urban divide.
Right.
But we have just not been willing to be bold in this area. The waiting list right now, we do have public charters in Texas. So if you are a child, you are allowed to apply outside of a conventional school to a public charter school network. That waiting list in Texas is close to 150,000 students.
Wow.
And about a third of that is just in the Houston area alone. But the situation in HISD resulted in our education commissioner, along with the governor, to shut down one of the largest urban school districts in the entire country because of the fact that they didn't pass their students and they didn't provide the quality education that parents demanded. So the state intervened, and we're now composing a new board of directors and trying to brick by brick rebuild a school district. But you'll find these public charter schools, and I happen to be involved with one up in North Texas called Uplift Education, where over 90% graduate from high school. And the stat that I love is that almost 100%, I mean, almost 100% are the first in their family to go get a college degree. I mean, that's how you break cycles of poverty.
Yeah.
And it's through school choice and giving an opportunity for them to tailor an education that they see fit, and that they can then build upon for their brighter future, whether that's high, whether that's, you know, career tech, whether that's a 4-year university or going ahead and getting a job.
Yeah, such an important thing. And you know, all this rhetoric that we're talking about now doesn't, there's so few people that are talking the way you are, trying to address what it is. There's this battle in between Democrats and conservatives over the teachers union, but I sometimes get a sense, I know many teachers, my son was special ed, and so I met these amazing teachers who groomed him and helped him get through all of his challenges and to be productive. Is there a gap sometimes between the people who actually teach, like yourself, and the unions who maybe have a different agenda because they're involved in a Washington political paradigm? I'm just curious, if as someone who's got to see it on the inside, what that looks like, and whether there's some opportunity to create a closure between the differences in opinion.
Absolutely. I remember as a teacher at my first job after college, getting a visit from the county union boss, and he said, "Well, you know, I'd like to sit with you to ask you to join the union." I said, "Well, what benefits do I get for the hundreds of dollars that come out of my paycheck?" And he said, "Well, we'll defend you in court." And then I said, where does my money go in terms of political contributions? And he's like, "Well, you're just gonna have to check out our website." And I checked it out, and it was all Democrat candidates for office in Florida. And then what a lot of teachers don't know is that legal protection is available to you with other, either on your own accord, so you can save your bar fees that you pay, or there's other conservative teachers unions out there. So there are some apolitical unions out there, and there are conservative ones on a national basis that will provide you coverage in your jurisdiction. But absolutely, it's just a political game. And it's just a reminder that anytime when you discuss education policy, you hear somebody talking about somebody other than the kids, you know that they are, that their intent is in the wrong place. And so that's, when I talk about school choice, this is about families. This is about giving the parent a choice. And it's about giving kids an opportunity to get ahead outside of failing school districts. And unfortunately, in this discussion, we lose sight of the fact, and the unions, frankly, are out there for themselves and their political interests.
Yeah, they become like little government agencies. It's so funny to watch the way that empowerment works. I want to ask you one question that I think is really dominated the headlines over the last 6 or 7 months, and I don't know where the issue will end before 2022. But as you look out at the size of government, how it affects our lives, whether they dictate everything to when we can worship now during COVID, that was clearly an issue, to what we're going to spend, how much of our money goes to them, what our schools are going to, what our kids are going to learn. Is there a moment now where Hispanic Americans, African Americans, and traditional, you know, independents, even some blue collar Democrats, come and say, you know what, this thing has just gotten out of control? Is there a unique moment that maybe, starting with the Trump movement of 16, now there's a chance to say, we're gonna take this big government, we're just gonna tighten it up? Is America ready for getting off the addiction of all things government?
I'm optimistic. You know, and it starts, at least in the Texas example down in South Texas, where you may have caught news of Javier Villalobos, the first Republican mayor to be elected down there in 50 years, for exactly that same reason. Because in Hidalgo County, you have one of the largest tax loads at the county and local level that you'll find in the entire state. And coincidentally, in one of the most poorest parts of our state, because of the lack of historic understanding that with lower taxation, lower regulation, you're going to create more free enterprise. If you do it in a transparent way and have free markets available to small businesses and entrepreneurs. And there's no more entrepreneurial community than the Hispanic community, at least in our state.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that's why it's people like Governor Abbott, like myself, Senator Cornyn, and others, and President Trump, who consistently carry a majority of the Hispanic vote in our state. To me, it's about, you know, political parties, namely our party, and candidates engaging these communities and talking about the commonalities. And it's important to do it the day after election as opposed to the day before an election, because obviously you're more authentic if you talk about the issues that face the community rather than trying to get a vote. And that's why, for example, my first trip after announcing and my first trip after getting reelected was down to South Texas, to exactly that area that I referred to. So absolutely, I think this is going to be an opportunity moving forward. And when put in the context of anybody who has a kid and they think about a 30 plus trillion dollar debt, they're going to think long and hard about the viability of our U.S. Treasury, how we're going to compete against China, what type of jobs are going to be available, and the quality of schools that are available to them. That message is going to win. So I'm very optimistic about our chances in 22.
It seems like it is going to be the epic election, too. It's going to be very interesting to watch the dynamics continue to shift. The polling data clearly shows some really unique shifting just in the last 5 months since Election Day. Have you ever met President Trump? Will you seek his endorsement? I mean, I'm just curious if you've ever had a relationship with him.
So I've known his son for a long time through business circles. And when I first ran for office for reelect in 2018, I was successful in getting his son's endorsement and later the president's endorsement.
Right.
I endorsed the president in 2016. I was one of the first statewide electeds to come out. Obviously, I helped out my dad, but when the writing was on the wall,
yep,
I saw that there was this energy at the grassroots level in our state. And I traveled to Iowa, South Carolina, you know, the early primary states, and it was very clear that he was wrapping it up. And so I jumped on the train. And, you know, there's a little known position here in Texas called the victory chair, where you work with the state party chair,
yep,
to help elect all of your down ballot candidates. And so I raised $1.5 million, which was easy to do with President Trump at the top of the ticket, and a high watermark for the Republican Party in the state of Texas, with close to, I think it was 90 seats in the Texas State House.
Wow.
And about 17 seats in the Texas Senate. So it was, or maybe even more than that. And so it was a really good night for Republicans. I helped him out in the reelect in 20. And though the verdict didn't come out the way that we wanted, it was a good night for the Republican Party. We solidified gains in Hispanic communities, and we continue to pick up opportunities and growing, you know, different demographics in our state. Now, in terms of this race, I've talked to the president twice since I've announced. He mentioned that Brandon Judd, so the National Border Patrol Council,
right,
he considers to be a personal advisor on southern border issues, namely illegal immigration. And so when he heard that he endorsed me, he was very surprised by that. He said that he was concerned about Ken's ability to win in the general election. And that's a concern that all Republicans have here in Texas. Ken was the lowest vote getter last election cycle. And this is nothing against Ken personally, but for the good of the party, it just makes sense for him to step aside and just have a candidate that's conservative, that has a proven track record of representing Texas values without the baggage, so that we can focus on the Democrats in November of 22.
Yeah, that is the key, getting everyone oriented in the same direction and focus on that. Well, Commissioner, this, I could go all day. This is such a fun conversation. I want to stay on track. It sounds like you got some news coming out in the next couple of weeks on the border wall. So we'll have to check back with you then and see what legal work you're working on there.
Absolutely. We'll do so.
It's an honor to have you on the show. Thank you for spending so much time with us today.
Absolutely, John. Take care.
God bless. Take care now. You too. God bless. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break, and then we're going to wrap things up for the day. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down. And my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition and, of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, that wraps up the day for the podcast. I'm very grateful that you were here to listen. Hey, I've got an idea. I've been using this service. I love it. They're now partners with us here at Just the News. Paint your life. You take a photo of something precious in your life, your family, your friends. You send it to them. They get a real artist who creates a real portrait, a real painting. This is an incredible gift, one that lasts forever, touches your heart. I just did this for my wife recently, broke her into tears. It was great. It's just such a meaningful thing. Well, right now they're running a special for us. At paintyourlife.com, there's a no-risk opportunity. If you don't love the final painting, your money's refunded, guaranteed. And right now, because you're a Just the News listener, a John Solomon Reports podcast listener, you're going to get 20% off your painting. That's right, 20% off and free shipping. How do you do that? Just text Just News, the word Just News, to 64,000 on your phone. Let me do that one more time. Just News, text it, 64,000 on your phone. You'll get that incredible discount. What an opportunity. Check it out. We'll be back tomorrow with more news. Until then, God bless you, and God bless this incredible country, the United States of America. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guaranteed. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition and, of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.